We have four cases on the calendar this morning. Case from the Court of International Trade. Three patent cases, either from the PTAB or a district court. The first case is Nucor versus ArcelorMittal, AK Steel and US Steel, 2018-17-87, Mr. DeFrancesco.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Robert DeFrancesco on behalf of Nucor Corporation, plaintiff appellate. The Commerce Department's application of the preferentiality test in this case does not comport with the statute and Congress's intent to replace the test with the adequate remuneration standard, and therefore under Chevron Step 1 is entitled to no deference and is contrary to law.
Well, you've got a pretty steep hill to climb. You've got a thorough decision from a judge on a specialized court. Two other judges on that court have come to similar conclusions. They're affirming a specialized agency, and you're saying they're all wrong.
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that the lower court in the original case in Maverick, where this was an issue of first impression at that court, misinterpreted the application of Chevron. They did not apply Chevron Step 1. Instead, they applied Chevron Step 2. We believe Congress, in this instance, spoke directly to the issue about whether the preferentiality test should continue in existence, and in the legislative history expressly said that it ought to be replaced, and that under Step 1, that expressed intent has to be given meaning and means that you cannot continue to apply that test.
Does that mean that Commerce can never apply the test under no circumstances?
Well, we believe in the legislative history, we believe Congress was pretty specific when it said you must replace the test. Congress didn't say you must replace the test, but you can keep it in certain circumstances. It just said replace the test, which means you cannot apply the preferentiality test any longer. That now they have discretion to determine what adequate remuneration means, and Commerce has done that, but what that deference only goes so far, and they cannot continue
to apply. If they have the discretion to define adequate remuneration, and a case comes along and takes you through all the tiers. You're at the third tier, and you still cannot figure, for the circumstances of that case, what adequate remuneration. Why is it unreasonable that Commerce at that point would say, when we reach this point, and there's nothing else for us to do, then we're going to define adequate remuneration to be under an application of something similar to the preferential benefits test?
Your Honor, I think to answer that question, when you look at, they can't apply Tier 1, they can't apply Tier 2, and they get to Tier 3, it's unreasonable to continue to apply the test that Congress said you should no longer apply. They could have applied other tests, they could have looked in other instances. In fact, in other cases where they're looking at a Tier 3, they have said, I cannot use the information in this particular market, and they've gone to third country markets when they're valuing land or natural gas or the like, and we've discussed those in our brief. So there are instances where even under Tier 3, they haven't applied the preferentiality test and they've gone outside of that. Where Congress has said you must replace the test, it's unreasonable to continue to apply the test.
Can I ask you this question? And I guess I'm looking at appendix page 9028, which I think is page 23 of the relevant Commerce decision.
Sure.
Why does that not say we actually examine whether KEPCO, is that how you call it?
KEPCO.
Recovered its costs.
Mm-hmm.
This is now completely putting aside the KPX
sure.
issue. But so, in what sense is it true that Commerce relied only on an inquiry into preferential pricing? It seems to me that in that crucial paragraph, it actually asks, "Did KEPCO recover its costs, which is not just a preferential pricing inquiry, though preferential pricing might be evidentially relevant to that.
Certainly, Your Honor. So in that portion of the determination, the Department of Commerce's determination expressly says we are coming to this conclusion based on the preferentiality test.
I don't know quite what the test is. Just describe what they did. Don't use the word test.
Sure. They examined the prices that KEPCO set for industrial users and then examined the prices that the Korean steel industry paid and found that the prices that were set for the large industrial users were in fact the prices that they paid. They essentially examined the government distorted price against itself, which is...
But that's not all this paragraph does.
Correct.
It also says when we examine everything, we think KEPCO recovered its costs.
Correct. In that cost section of their determination, they spend the beginning portion of it explaining why they don't need to look at cost, and then they get to the portion you're referring to where they said, we looked at KEPCO's cost and we believe they recovered cost. In our case brief below, we explained in great detail why that's not the accurate cost that they looked at.
Is this because of KPX?
I think you have to understand in context how the entire market functions.
Suppose it is determined, as I think that CIT determined, that you did not effectively preserve an argument that one has to look through KEPCO into KPX, for which you might well have a very good argument. But let's just assume that that was not preserved here, though it might be made in a new proceeding. Then in what sense did Commerce not properly determine that KEPCO recovered its costs?
So in our case brief, where we lay this argument out, what we said to Commerce was that KEPCO owns 80 to 85% of all the generators in Korea. Those generators are both nuclear, natural gas, and coal. Those generators are completely rolled up into KEPCO's financial statement. Those generators generate the electricity. The KPX, which is also owned by KEPCO, has a board, the electricity board. There are members of KEPCO that sit on that board, members of Korean government sit on that board, and members of the generators sit on that board. That board sets the price that will form the price that it will pay to the generators, and that price then becomes the price that KEPCO used to set its price. The problem with that price, the way that, and this is what we described in our case brief, was that there are two components to that price, the variable cost, which is adjusted based on the fuel used by the generators, and the fixed price. When they set that price, the fixed price, they apply a levelized, unified fixed cost, regardless of the fixed cost of the actual generator, which is highly distortive. And when
so nuclear power plants get the same
fixed cost
from,
as natural gas,
others, and there's
as
a
coal.
Radical difference. Correct. In fixed versus variable
and in cost. Our case brief, we detailed that in KEPCO's financial statement, which rolls up the cost of those generators, you can see that the fixed costs for nuclear generators are three times higher than the other generators. And in the Korean government's statements to the Department of Commerce in its questionnaire responses, the Korean government said, we have way to accurately measure this is to look at the electricity that the Korean steel industry consumed, which is mostly at night, and most of that electricity is generated by nuclear power generators. And so they told Commerce that that's how they ought to be examining it, and the evidence on the record shows that the massive amount of fixed costs for the nuclear generators, and that you're setting those that fixed cost price at a levelized price, then that doesn't reflect their fixed cost. And so that cost that KEPCO's using doesn't...
But that's KPX is setting that price, is that right?
The KPX
is setting the price that is selling the resulting power to KEPCO. Yeah.
Correct. But that price not only forms the basis of the price KEPCO uses to set its tariff rate, but it's also the price that remunerates the generators and determines whether those generators are covering their cost, and those costs roll back into KEPCO's financial statement. So it's the door swings both ways, I think is what we would say. Beyond that, in the National Assembly report, during verification, Commerce asked the Korean government about the National Assembly Report and why they shouldn't look at the National Assembly Report. And the Korean government said, well, when we supplied our generating costs to the National Assembly, we supplied the average generating cost per load amount. So when the particular electricity was generated, we supplied the average cost. And it was inappropriate to compare the average cost of generating the electricity at the time with the price that the particular industrial user paid. So on the one hand, it was, and then they said, they went on to say, the proper analysis would have been to compare the actual cost of generating the electricity that was consumed by the particular company. So they told Commerce that the proper analysis was to compare the actual cost of the produced electricity and as a justification for not using the National Assembly Report. Yet that average fixed cost is exactly what they're doing by levelizing it when they're transferring the cost downstream and what KEPCO's using to set its prices. So they're logically inconsistent with one another. And in fact, the Korean government's correct. What Commerce should have done is look at the actual cost of producing electricity and the analysis in our brief, in our case brief.
So where does the preferential benefit analysis come in that you say that Commerce conducted? After they arrive at the government price, then, and you tell me if I'm wrong, then it appears that what Commerce did is they looked at all the different categories that of the sectors that use electricity and say there's no one's receiving preferential treatment here. Everyone's receiving the same price.
Actually, Your Honor, the way they conduct the preferentiality test mm-hmm. is to look at only industrial users. And they actually say that in their when they explain the test in Magnesium from Canada, they say when we examine preferentiality, we look at the government-provided price within that consuming group, but in this case, industrial consumers. And they said we set a price for those industrial consumers.
So to what extent, then, on this argument that you just made, was that waived? There's a waiver issue here. If you fail to exhaust your remedies, you fail to bring up these arguments before Commerce. And what happens if we find that you waived those arguments? Do we need to get to the statutory interpretation issue?
Well, the waiver argument goes back to this question about piercing through on the cost side. We disagree. We didn't waive those arguments. They're flushed out thoroughly in our case brief, and Commerce addresses those arguments in its decision memo when it talks about why it believes it doesn't need to go through and examine those costs. The discussion at the lower court about waiver had
in your arguments you lean quite heavily on the KPX, but so you separated them out from KEPCO. Why weren't you able to do that earlier in the investigation?
Well, we didn't separate them out. We said consistently that KEPCO owns KPX, and they also own the generators. And Commerce's traditional practice has always been to take subsidiaries and entities that they own and roll them in together to treat them as one entity. In this instance, KPX is a not-for-profit entity, so they're not rolled into their financial statements because they don't show profits. It's just a pass-through.
Counsel, you want to save some time for rebuttal? You're well into it.
Yes, Your Honor, please, if I may.
We will hold it for you. Mr. Prehan.
Good morning. May it please the Court. The Court should affirm the Court of International Trade's judgment. First, with respect to the question of statutory interpretation, we respectfully disagree that Congress spoke to the issue here. The statute is clearly silent on the question of what is adequate remuneration.
They weren't silent when they said that we're replacing the preferentiality test with adequate remuneration. That's pretty clear, and that.
Well, Congress didn't say. Certainly, they did change the language of the statute, but Congress never said we don't want Commerce to ever consider preferentiality.
Well, but they do say replace. They don't say replace except in certain situations or replace in part. Don't you agree that the statement of administrative action says that that the preferentiality treatment test is to be replaced?
Well, what the SAA says is that the statute doesn't actually define what a benefit is, what adequate remuneration is. Congress left it up to Commerce to make that determination. And even if it were true that, Congress
That's true, but it says, doesn't the SSA say, don't use a preferentiality test?
No, the SAA.
Because we're replacing them.
No, the SAA doesn't say that, Your Honor. I think there is some language in Commerce's, when it set forth its regulations, Commerce did say that we are changing our analysis, which is exactly what it did. And what it did was it said, look, first we're going to look at market rates. If they're not available, then we'll look at world market rates. And only then do we consider preferentiality. And it's not just a pure preferentiality analysis. I want to emphasize that point. It's not just preferentiality. It's not just asking were the respondents treated differently. There's an added component to it, actually two added components here. The first is Commerce looked at the actual process for how rates are set and said, is that consistent with, is there a consistent process? And is it discernible? Is it transparent? And in fact, we know that it is based upon the fact that rates were increased three times in just the few years preceding the period of investigation here. And only then does Commerce look and say, based upon that price structure, based upon that tariff structure, only then does Commerce look and say, well, did the respondents get a better deal than other similarly situated parties?
And so isn't that what Congress, when it amended the CVD statute, said this is no longer going to be the test?
No, it didn't, Your Honor. It never said that, and it never prohibited Commerce from including preferentiality as part of its analysis. And again, even if Congress had said, we don't want you to use preferentiality as a general matter, well, Commerce has effectuated that by first looking at...
They don't say as a general matter. It's pretty clear.
Well, it's not.
It's being replaced. Let's look at the language. Do you have the SSA?
I do, Your Honor.
All right. I'm looking at the actual copy.
The statute itself?
Sure. It says, with respect to the provision of goods and services, current law relies on the standard of preferentiality to determine the existence and the amount of a benefit. Section, and then it cites a section, replaces this standard. It doesn't say replace in part. It says replaces this standard with a standard from Article 14 of the subsidies agreement, the less than adequate remuneration standard.
Right. And that's true. There's certainly
it doesn't say in general.
But if you look at the SAA, what it says is that the statute doesn't define what a benefit is. So it's still leaving up to the expert agency how to reach adequate remuneration. And what Commerce has said is that
correct.
Yes.
And it's clear that Congress left it up to the administrative authority, the Secretary of Commerce, to fill in the gaps.
That's right.
Right? And to
right.
define adequate
right.
remuneration.
Right.
But in that same delegation of authority and that mandate to fill in the gaps, isn't it also telling that this is a test that's being replaced? What does replace mean if it doesn't mean, you know, no longer usable?
But well, I respectfully, Your Honor, they mean different things. Here, Commerce did replace preferentiality, and it did so in two ways. Number one, as I said, it flipped the analysis, so the focus is on market prices and then world market prices, and only then does Commerce consider preferentiality, and only as part of its Tier 3 analysis. Preferentiality isn't the only part of it, and here Commerce didn't just look at did they get a better rate, but also looked at the process for how rates were established, and then it went on to also consider costs. So even if it were true that Commerce couldn't sort of as a general matter consider preferentiality, it's irrelevant here because it did consider the underlying costs for KEPCO.
Can I just follow up on, you just said something which seemed to me a little bit different from what you said about 3 minutes ago. When you said that when the regulations changed a number of things and it had, you know, two essentially comparative price sort of possibilities, and now you're down to the residual clause. And the first time you said that Commerce under the residual clause, the third scenario or possibility or something, does two things, you said. One, transparency, consistency, a pure process thing, which is not right. substantive at all. And then you said preferential. And then this, about 30 seconds ago, you added in cost,
right.
Which is, it seems to me is what Commerce did in this last section of this decision, which I will tell you strikes me as more or less necessary in order for this last thing to be something other than substantively more than preferential treatment. So it is the third standard, the residual clause, one that includes in general, as it appears to here, an inquiry into cost recovery?
It's not, we believe it's not required under the statute, but what Commerce has said is that...
How do you decide whether something is adequately remunerative if it, I mean, that seems to me to practically mean recover your costs.
But
a cost being measurable in a extremely wide range of ways.
So a couple of points. First, even under Tier 1 and Tier 2, costs may not necessarily be recovered.
Prices comparison
right.
to competitive mm-hmm. markets necessarily carries information about costs.
It does, but there may be situations where costs aren't recovered in any given year, for example. So we don't believe that the statute actually does require an analysis of costs. But also, the statute says that that you look to whether or not
How do you know if you've been adequately remunerated if you don't know what your costs are?
Well, let me put it this way, and the court, I think, in Maverick said this, which is that if respondents were being charged less than others similarly situated, that would be evidence that the rate paid wasn't arrived at by the standard pricing mechanism, that is, not based on the electricity market in Korea, and that's what the statute tells us to look at. In other words, the statute recognizes that you should be looking at the relevant market here. And there may be situations where the market is largely a monopoly market, for example. I mean, that's often the case with electricity.
So looking at the market to find out what?
To find out
whether the seller is adequately remunerated, which means getting in some way, its cost back.
Well, Commerce did that here, but...
Right, I know it did it here, but that's what I guess I'm trying to figure out, whether in this case what it did was perfectly fine, though maybe your broader legal argument wouldn't be perfectly
right.
fine.
Right. We don't think costs are always... That analysis is always required. What we believe that what the statute requires is for Commerce to look at the market conditions in Korea, and that an analysis of process, in other words, how the rates are set, is that a consistent process, coupled with how are these respondents treated, satisfies the statute. But again, Commerce did more here. It actually did look at...
How does consistency... I think I have an intuition about this, but you tell me. How does consistency tend to support the idea that the seller is being adequately remunerated?
Well,
maybe it's just consistently subsidizing.
Well, consistent with market principles is different from, say, consistent with free market principles. So you look to the market in Korea, and we know that it is effectively largely a monopoly situation. And that's true with respect to electricity in many markets. And so
right,
the question
but
then becomes...
Ordinarily in antitrust world and common carrier world, you would say... monopolies don't tend to have a problem of getting their money back. The problem is that they get more than that. This is a flip situation, right, in which the worry is that the whole point of this statute is that maybe the government authority as seller is consistently subsidizing. And yet the 1994 statute says they have to be adequately remunerative. Doesn't that require something more than consistency?
No, because it's you're looking to the market itself, in essence. Yes, it's true, Commerce certainly did more here to look at KEPCO's costs. But again, Commerce has said that costs may not be a consideration in every case. So I don't want to cabin the agency's discretion and say that cost analysis is always required. And I'll fall back to what I said earlier, which is that even under Tier 1 and Tier 2, costs may not be recovered in any
right, but as the
year.
Supreme Court has said in various common carrier cases like Verizon, and I mean it's sort of standard law and the economics of regulation, that one thing you could sort of count on as a logical economic matter is that if the market is competitive, then selling at competitive prices or selling at the same price as other competitors, businesses don't get to last if they're not recovering their costs. Governments do.
No, I understand, Your Honor. I would just say again, the question is it consistent with market principles? That is, consistent with what the Korean market for electricity is. And looking at that process coupled with preferentiality, whether or not they received a better rate, we believe satisfies that. But again, Commerce did look at costs here. They did an extensive analysis of KEPCO's costs and concluded that KEPCO is recovering its costs. And just to touch on some of the evidence cited here, much of that evidence concerns either KPX or concerns evidence that was outside of the period of investigation, that predated the period of investigation. For example, the Korea Assembly report was approximately 2 years earlier. We know that rates were increased at least three times since that report.
Can you help me understand on this question about non-exhaustion of some argument with respect to KPX? What is it that was missing from what your friend on the other side described as the case brief that seemed to want to talk about not just the immediate prices KEPCO paid to its supplier, immediate supplier, namely KPX, but to underlying generators which were part of the KEPCO family?
What was missing was what counsel just said. He just referenced piercing through costs. There was no effort to sort of pierce the corporate veil before Commerce and argue that the cost from KPX to the generators were the relevant costs. There was no argument about that. The only even mention was in the case brief where there was a parenthetical mentioning that KPX was 100% owned by KEPCO. But that certainly isn't sufficient to preserve an argument that Commerce should actually conduct some sort of piercing analysis. And there was never any argument that KPX is part of the relevant authority. If you look at the petition was all about KEPCO and what KEPCO had done, not about KPX.
Counsel, you were going to yield three of your minutes
Your Honor.
To Mr. Winton.
Thank you. We respectfully request that the court affirm.
Why don't just Mr. Green set that for 3 minutes?
I'll try to speak fast. I'm Jeffrey Winton.
Not too fast. We want to understand it.
I'm Jeffrey Winton here today on behalf of Defendant Appellee, the Government of the Republic of Korea. I'm a last-minute substitute counsel. The lawyer who was responsible for drafting the brief has been promoted and is not available today. And since I have litigated this issue in other cases, he asked me to.
He's arguing in the Supreme Court, is it?
No. He's the Director General for Bilateral Affairs now, I think. So, I wanted to try to address some of the questions that you had before in a somewhat different way. When you talk about what does it mean to replace the statutory language, well, we all know what happened here. There was an agreement in Geneva defining a subsidy, and they define subsidies when government sells goods or services in terms of adequate remuneration. And that language was adopted wholesale, into the U.S. statute. That's what replace means. We had, preferential pricing was the old standard. It had encrusted determinate decisions about what that meant. We have a new standard. Whether that new standard is the same, whether it overlaps, whether it's completely different, is not addressed. The only issue is we're now using the WTO terminology. And there were a lot of other changes in the statute at the same time to replace.
What does replace mean to you? When Congress says we're replacing this standard for this one.
In the old statute, it said you look at preferential pricing. In the new statute, it says you look at adequacy of remuneration.
So one has been replaced with the other.
They're different. But whether they are the same or different, the meaning of those two terms is not addressed by replace. We're just saying we had one word in the statute.
Why go through the trouble of amending the law if it doesn't make a difference?
Because
surely you're not going to tell me that going back to when this was negotiated, when the subsidies agreement was being negotiated, that this didn't make a difference. This has made a huge difference.
Well, But the reason Congress changed the words is because there was an agreement. What that agreement, and just focus on a portion of the statute that nobody's talked about, which is after defining, you should look at adequacy of remuneration, the statute goes on to say, for purposes of Clause 4, the adequacy of remuneration shall be determined in relation to prevailing market conditions for the good or service being provided or the goods being purchased in the country which is subject to investigation or review. Prevailing market conditions include price, quality, availability.
Where are you reading from, sir?
This is 19 U.S.C. 1677.
Is that the CVD preamble?
No, this is the statute. It's the actual statute. This is enacted by Congress. It doesn't mention, it doesn't say you look at costs. It doesn't say you look at profitability. It says you look at price, quality, availability, marketability, transportation, and other conditions of purchase or sale. And I would suggest...
How can you be adequately remunerated if you don't get your costs back?
Well, what does adequate remuneration mean? All I can tell you is what Congress wrote here sounds pretty much like you look to see that everyone in the market is treated the same, all other things being equal. That's what the statutory language says.
I would not understand the English language term adequate remuneration to say everybody is getting equally subsidized.
Well, for purposes of Clause 4, the adequacy of remuneration shall be determined. That's what
shall be determined,
said.
Right.
So, you know, you may say to me, Congress said something stupid, but I
no, it's not stupid. It seems to have a meaning, but taking account of all the conditions Congress mentioned, it has to be adequately remunerated.
I would say to you, when this was negotiated, what the understanding is, the price has to be sufficient, adequate, whatever you want to call it. But how do you measure whether the price is sufficient or adequate? You want to say that means profitable. But sometimes in a market, people lose money. It happens. It's a price that our standard economic theory says in a competitive market, your price covers the marginal cost of the last supplier into the market, right? Which doesn't mean he recovers all of his costs, total costs. And here I would say that counsel for Nucor, has misunderstood that basic economic concept. The Korean government KPX pricing is based on a marginal cost theory. They set the price at each at the marginal cost of the last supplier in, which is exactly what a competitive market would do. Now, whether that is profitable overall over the course of the year or not,
right? But there was no inquiry here into how KPX sets its price.
I believe
so. If there were an inquiry, you might.
What the record evidence on is, but in any event, I would just say to you, when determining adequate remuneration, there is no evidence that Congress, other than your reading of the words, and I understand you're reading the words a certain way, but there's no evidence that Congress meant it that way, and when they listed the things that you look at, they didn't say, is it a price that gives you a profit? It says, you look in the market under consideration, and you see what other people are paying, all other things being equal. And that's actually what the statute says.
Can you give an instance where you can determine whether you have you've been adequately remunerated or that you've made a profit or a big profit without knowing what the cost was?
Sure. I would say you are assuming that adequate remuneration means enough to make a profit. And I'm saying to you, I think what Congress said adequate remuneration, what they really were saying is whatever they agreed in Geneva, we're using that word. Okay? That's what they said. But what did they agree in Geneva? I think you could say adequate remuneration means the price that you ought to get in a market. Now, whether that price in a market is an above-cost price or below-cost price, that they just said it should be the price you get in the market.
Even if it's counterintuitive, because normally adequate remuneration means making a profit.
I don't know, because I lose money all the time. So. But
that's not adequate.
Anyway, I apologize for any inadequacies I've shown.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. DeFrancesco has some rebuttal time.
minutes, Your Honor.
Set it for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to hit a few quick points. To the point about a monopoly situation, as the government was discussing, when we're talking about a Tier 2 benchmark where the Commerce Department has recognized that the government so dominates the market that they can't accurately determine a market-determined price, they go outside the market and use a world benchmark. So the idea that there are certain monopolies are acceptable and certain monopolies aren't is inconsistent with what we think they should be doing. Beyond that, after the statute was changed, in subsequent cases, even Commerce itself has said that the new test, the government-determined price, must be compared with a market-determined price. It is no longer sufficient to say that the government does not discriminate among buyers. So Commerce has recognized that they're not supposed to apply this test, but they, in certain circumstances, they still do. And then going to the KEPCO issue and the council talked about going through the veil, there's no piercing of the veil because KEPCO owns the generators. The generators are 100% owned. They're rolled into their financial statements. They own KPX. It's all one entity. Just to make a fine point on the exhaustion argument, the argument they raised at the CIT dealt with whether the argument should have been made that KPX is an authority. The idea about who an authority is goes to where the financial contribution was made. Here, the financial contribution was that the Korean government, through KEPCO, set prices, and the issue is whether those prices are market-determined. Our argument before Commerce was fully flushed out that the prices, when they're examining whether that covers cost, they ought to be looking at the correct cost, and they're not if they're stopping the analysis at only how KEPCO sets its price by the cost that's acquiring it. It has to look at its generator's cost. And we walk them through that analysis as to how those generator costs are not appropriately set. I see I'm done. Again, the standard pricing mechanism is itself a subsidy. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.